Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Rudy Rochman, shalom lecha. Great to have you here with us on 101.9 Chai FM.
Shalom. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
So, Rudy, I obviously doing what I do, am on, internet platforms a lot, YouTube platforms, and you pop up pretty much, most of the time. You're a very busy man. And I thought, A, it would be great to chat to you. B, it would be really interesting to find out a little about your story. Yeah. What led you to do this important work?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think at some point everyone has this sort of moment in their life. It could be one moment or it could be a series of moments that gets them to the right place or to the place that their tikkun has to take them on. So for example, me being born in France, raised most of my life in the US, I was sort of going through an identity crisis. I always knew I was Jewish and that that's who my people are. But whenever someone would ask me, where are you from? I was supposed to give a different answer. In Miami, I was the French kid. In France, I was the American cousin. My mother's side is Sephardi. My dad's side is Ashkenazi, but my dad adopted my mom's customs when they got married, so I was raised fully Sephardic. But going to a Jewish day school until high school, I was always labeled Ashkenazi by the rabbis because my dad was Ashkenazi, even though I was raised with zero Ashkenazi culture.
Yeah.
You know, I was raised doing mimuna and all these things. So I really wanted to figure out what is the answer I can give to someone when they ask me, where are you from and who are you?
Yes.
And I went through a anti-Semitic experience at the age of 7. I kicked off of a bus with my mom, my younger brother, for being Jewish in London.
In London?
And that's, yeah, in London.
Oh, okay.
And that's what started everything. That moment made me promise to myself that the next time I'd see any form of anti-Semitism, in fact, you know, really any form of injustice, I'd have to be prepared, not only physically, but also emotionally, intellectually, ideologically. And also that moment taught me who I was, because I realized it didn't matter where I was born, grew up, lived in, traveled to, resided in, what passport I had, I was a Jew. And I was a Jew not because of what I believed in or didn't believe in, but because I'm a descendant of a civilization from Judea, also known as Am Yisrael. And that's who I am and where I'm from. And that's where everything started.
You're clearly a guy with a lot of guts, because I have been confronted in Australia in a number of their cities by very, very threatening demonstrators who have no compunction in becoming violent. I've seen your videos, a number of them, many of them in the USA. You seem to have absolutely no issue going up to the middle of a very fanatical crowd and taking them on.
Yeah, I don't have fear to spread light where there's darkness. And also when I'm approaching people, I usually approach them with respect. I'm not antagonistic. I usually try to find a way for them to understand where they're wrong or where they can see a more holistic version of the truth, even if they have some truths. And also I don't think most people are used to dealing with Jews that have confidence. So they don't really know what to do when they're put in front of that.
So related to that, I wanted to ask you, have you found in all your advocacy that actually people are willing to listen, or has the debate become so extreme that each side is just refusing to hear the other?
Yeah, so first of all, I see my work more as activism than advocacy. I see advocacy more as like supporting of a cause, whereas activism is playing a role to take that cause further. And most people that I engage with, you know, most human beings at some point want to find some sort of common ground. You have those people that are extreme, like I've debated neo-Nazis that no matter what you say, they believe all Jews should be killed. But in the way, through speaking to them respectfully, they expose their own ideas and they expose themselves in the videos. But for the most part, most people that I engage with, especially when it comes to Palestinians, at first there's heightened emotions and they could be a little bit tense and triggering. But after a while, once they realize that I'm not an enemy, and to the contrary, as a proud, strong Jew, Zionist connected to the land, I want to be able to work and to build a future for all peoples in this land. Once they see that I'm not their enemy, there's actually a lot of very productive conversations that are created.
I watched, just by the way, you obviously wouldn't know this, but we had Adar Weinreb on the show probably 2 weeks ago, because I watched the show with you debating Noam Chomsky. And I thought, my goodness me, takes a lot of guts to get online and debate Noam Chomsky. I mean, he's an icon of the left, an icon.
Yeah, I mean, I was very frustrated with that conversation and not really impressed. I was expecting a lot more intellectually, because he brought up ideas that the Jews are fake Khazarian people from Europe, which has been factually disproven, genetically disproven, historically, and even as a master linguist himself, linguistically disproven, because even in the languages that Jews have built, the Creoles, whether it's Ladino or Yiddish, you have elements of our experiences in the diaspora, and there's no language of a people from Khazaria within our language, and there's no evidence or basis to say. So a lot of the things that he was saying was really basically playing his role as a Jewish token with a lot of internalized anti-Semitism that will say whatever he needs to say in order for an anti-Israel audience or an anti-Jewish audience to see him as a hero. So I was not impressed at all, and I tried to bring the conversation several times around, okay, let's talk about how we can move forward and build a reality on the land. But he kept going back to this, let me take this whole situation out of context and just blame Israel forever for all of it. And when someone takes a situation and blames the Jews for it, we usually know what that's called.
Where did you manage to educate yourself? How did you become so incredibly comfortable with all this material?
I don't think it's one moment or one source or one book. I think it's just over the years. I asked myself the right questions already at a young age, trying to figure out what does it even mean to be a Jew? Who are we? Why do we have a right to exist? Where are we from? How do we relate our identity to the rest? And I think the reason I went on that path of trying to educate myself is because I realized that a lot of the Jewish education that existed, especially in the diaspora, at least in my experience and that of those that I know, was often to teach us how to be Jews in theory, but not in practice. So to know how to pray and to do our traditions and to believe in certain things, which are very important, but not how to act and not how to speak and not how to make sure that anti-Semitism never happens again, or is at least minimized and recognized by society as something wrong. So with time, I got into many debates and conversations, books, documentaries, YouTube videos. And one thing that gives me the most confidence, I think, is that I know the counter narratives to our narrative better than usually the people I speak to. So I know exactly what they're referencing, what sources, what their thought leaders are, why they're thinking in a certain way. And oftentimes they'll try to make trap questions. Like they'll say, where are your grandparents from? Because they expect me to say Poland or Morocco in order for them to say, oh, got you. Your family is not from Israel. But because I already know why they're asking that question, I'll say, my grandparents are from Israel. They were displaced by a Western white imperial nation called the Romans. And that's why they were born outside of Israel. But you, with your logic as a Palestinian or pro-Palestinian activist, you wouldn't say that Palestinians born in the diaspora aren't connected to the land. So don't try to use that argument as a double standard to me. So the reason I'm able to answer that way is because I already know why they're saying what they're saying. And I think that gives me definitely an edge in conversations.
Rudy, we're nearly out of time. I've got to tell you, I loved every second of speaking to you, and I hope this is the first of a number of engagements. I've got to tell you, one of our listeners has just written in Hebrew and says, Rudy, ya totach, i.e. he's a bomb. So approving of what you're saying. I want to leave you in a very good way. Absolutely. I was also thinking you were very lucky that you were brought up Sephardic and not Ashkenazic. The food is definitely, definitely better. I want to leave you with one question, and that is, are you finding that the impact of the Abraham Accords are making your life a little easier in this regard? Are people beginning to understand things as a different paradigm, or has it not shifted things much?
For the most part, no. The only thing that it's really done that I've seen, and again, it's something brand new, so we don't yet know where it's going to go, and I only hope it goes, is that the opinions and the views of people living in the countries that have developed a sort of peace accord with Israel, whether in Morocco, Sudan, Bahrain, soon to be Oman, and the UAE and other countries, are starting to be very, can you hear me?
Yeah, no, I can hear perfectly. Go on.
Yeah, they're starting to be much more open-minded to the idea of Israel, much more open-minded to relations with Israelis, whether in business or even personal relations, friendships. And so I've spoken to several people from UAE and other countries that are activists locally that never really knew anything about Israel. They knew that the world didn't really like Israel, that there was something going on with the conflict, but they didn't necessarily have negative opinions. But when the Abraham Accords took place, they started to look into it and found out that there's a beautiful culture, and now they're looking forward to visit. So I think a lot of this, the personal relations of the human beings from the ground level in those countries are developing, and I think that's definitely something positive, especially for the long term. But for the other things, when it comes to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict or how the world sees Israel, I don't think it's affected, at least as of now, in any real way.
Rudy Rochman, thank you so much for talking to us today. Yeah, I loved the energy and I loved what you had to say. And as I said, I hope that's the first and not the last time we engage.
La Rabah.